Hiya, you are listening to Into It. I'm Daniel Welsh. As usual, I'm here with Rachel McGraw. We've got Ashley Percival back.
Yay. How are you doing, Pesh?
I'm good, thanks.
The whole family's back together.
Feeling much better.
Rachel, where have you been?
I went to Warsaw.
This week?
How was it this week? It was lovely. It was cold.
When did you get back?
I got back yesterday night about 9 o'clock.
So basically, have you been following any entertainment news at all?
Barely.
Fantastic. Well, this is great.
We're in for fun next 20 minutes.
Yeah,
then.
We'll just fill you in.
It's going to be good. So over the next 20 minutes, we're going to be chatting about celebrity relationships. We're going to be looking ahead to the Grammys this weekend and remembering one of the top TV moments of the 2000s. But first, the TV show everybody was talking about this week was The Moorside on BBC One. Two-part drama focusing on the disappearance of Shannon Matthews back in 2008. So Sheridan Smith is in it as Julie Bushbees, who was Karen Matthews' good friend leading the search. And she's won critical acclaim. But some people on social media are saying that it might be a bit of an exploitative drama. Ashley, hello. Mm. You watched it, didn't you?
I did, and I enjoyed it.
What did you reckon? Give me the spiel.
So, first off, I thought the acting was incredible. I think, I don't know the name of the woman that plays Karen Matthews.
I've got it written down for you. She's called Gemma Whelan.
She was fantastic. Her performance as well, like, she's such a versatile actress. Like, I went and looked her up afterwards, and she's been in Game of Thrones. She's also an impressionist. Like, she's a comedy actress as well. And Sheridan Smith, obviously, it goes without saying that she was amazing.
I would honestly watch Sheridan Smith play anybody. Like, she's so good.
I would watch her just, like, go about her daily business, to be honest.
Well, I actually would, but again, because I think that would be a genuinely interesting watch as well, but that's just more to do with Sheridan. Rachel, you did not see it.
No.
Because you were in Warsaw at the time, is that right?
I was, yes.
Partying up a storm.
In ways.
Yeah. No. All right, we'll leave that one there. What do you think of this kind of TV drama idea, then? Do you think it's a good idea, or do you see what people's point might be, that it might be a bit exploitative?
I think I can see both sides of it, really, because I think that it obviously is a case that so many people remember, and it was so unique, and there was this kind of natural drama to it. Like, the events that happened were more like something you'd expect from a TV drama.
They were, absolutely, the way it unfolded.
Yeah, so I can kind of see where the idea came from to make it, and that would be really good. But then you've kind of, it's not only people on social media who've spoken out, you've also had, like, is it kind of some of the family of Shannon Matthews, or like there's been,
I think Karen Matthews has said something along the lines of the truth will come out, or something like that in response.
And I just think that these things obviously are very sensitive, and ideally, I think, especially for the BBC who've made it, in an ideal world, they wouldn't have to contest with this. This should have been ironed out before they got to the point where it had been aired.
Yeah.
Really.
I think a lot of people, and what I actually think as well, is that Shannon Matthews, who is obviously the victim in all of this, she's just turned 18. So, like, she's, you know, going through the regular problems of an 18-year-old, as well as, oh my God, this terrible thing that happened when I was, like, 10 years old.
She's also living under a new identity now, which is, like, the kind of the weirdest thing about
it. Yeah,
she
exactly.
Must be watching this, looking and thinking, God, that was my life, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and also something that I had a personal problem with that I would now like to voice me concerns about, was there were moments in it where I sort of felt like, not that it was poking fun at sort of working class, lower income families and all of that, but it did invite others to a little bit. Certain comments in it, there were certain lines that I literally felt like I was watching the royal family. Like, Ash, I spoke to you the morning after and I said there were lines in it. There's a bit where they let off some balloons and one of them leans over to a friend and says, those balloons were a nice touch, dead classy. And I just thought, you know what? That is like a comedy line. Like, that's not like a serious drama line. It's a bit like, and it's not you're not laughing with the character either. The idea is that they did this and they did it for real, and we're now 10 years on going, oh, that, you know, like, nudge, we saw that happen, wasn't it sad, but also look at this element. And that made me a little bit uncomfortable. I will be watching next week for the second part, and I did think it was brilliant, but moments like that, there were a few lines like that where it made us shudder a little bit.
There were, but I kind of see it, the story itself is just so ridiculous. It's kind of is just beyond
belief, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beyond sort of what anyone could imagine or dream up. So I kind of feel that the kind of the ridiculous lines, especially the moment where she got up and danced when the phone rang.
Yes.
That was a real thing that happened. Like, that is a genuine thing.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? So moments like that where she got up and danced to the ringtone when she's supposed to be a grieving mother, possibly having lost one of her beloved children. That, I don't really have a problem with that because it was a genuine thing that happened. And as you said, that was what raised suspicion at the time. It's more the addition of lines from minor characters.
I suppose that they can't also prove that those lines were actually said. And it did have a disclaimer at the start of it, didn't it? It said, like, certain parts of the story have obviously been created for dramatisation purposes.
But then that is drama, isn't it?
In a TOWIE. Sadly, it didn't have a TOWIE voiceover at the start.
Maybe next week Denise Van Outen will put an appearance in.
God. Been given a bit of a zhuzh.
Sorry, I'm just taking a slick of my coffee while we're chatting. Brilliantly professional stuff. What do we think in general of dramas like this that are based on real events? So things like, you know, films about 9/11 and things that happened not 20 years ago, not 30 years ago, but like, you know, 5-10 years ago. Is there a point where it's, you've got to go, this is a bit soon. People are still kind of getting over this.
I think it's not even this kind of soonness of it. Because, you know, you think about like films that have been about 9/11 and they, you know, there's the one that I literally can't remember about the plane that was supposed to be in the attacks but wasn't. And it paints the people on it in a, you know, it's a really great light and it shows kind of what's assumed that they did.
Oh, is that Flight 43?
Something,
is it called?
Yeah. The name is similar to that. Whereas this was something that, like, had a big effect on a community in England. It's, I don't know, it just feels a lot closer to home. And as you say, like, you know, Shannon, she's in care, you know, she's been growing up under a different identity in care, like, these are real people.
And it was a really traumatic thing that did happen in her past. Having said that, I think we'll all be tuning in next week, won't we? So
Well, I think the important thing as well is like, and this is the BBC's defence, which they've actually come out and issued a statement and said, is that the story isn't told from the point of view of Shannon. It's told from the community's point of view and how the community pulls together in this sort of time of crisis. So it's a very sort of like heartfelt story in that kind of way. It's not a story of tragedy at the moment. It was certainly the first episode, wasn't it? It was a story of how all these people came together in sort of the toughest of times.
Yeah, and Sheridan Smith is the lead character in it, and she's not Karen Matthews. She's Karen Matthews' friend, and she's the one who's leading the search. So yeah, that is right. It is about the reaction and how, you know, people come together in times of adversity.
I think it's as well, just because the story is, like, as you say, it's close to home. So it kind of feels like you're a bit more invested in it, I guess.
It's one of those stories as well that, like, particularly in Britain, like, so many people have really strong feelings about. Like, I was, you know, reasonably young and I can still fully remember it. And I think when these things, like, play out in the newspapers in the way that they did as well, you know, like you say, that so much of what happens in the drama did actually happen. And in terms of information-wise, it's probably not really bringing new information to anybody.
I do wonder, like, if there will be some sort of dramatisation of, like, a similar case, the Madeleine McCann case, and how the reaction to that would be in relation to the
But again, do you know what? The Madeleine McCann case, for one thing, it's still ongoing. But for another thing, the McCanns are so... they're so against certain things being portrayed in certain ways.
Yeah, litigious in a way.
They would be much more able to put a stop to things than somebody like Karen Matthews could. Moving on, should we move on to something a bit lighter?
Yeah.
Let's talk Tom Hiddleston, because there is a fab feature in GQ with him this week. It's a really long interview where he talks about a lot of things, talks about his career, talks about his personal life, and obviously he talks about Taylor Swift. So this is the first real comment we've had from him about his relationship with Taylor Swift, but also about those fabulous photos of him in a tank top that says I Heart TS splashing about with all of our squad on the 4th of July.
Can't get over that is a thing that happened.
Genuinely, it's him and all of our mates from school, and he looks like he's chaperoning them while wearing an I Heart TS tank top in the water. So he's come out, he has said, to address the pictures that everybody was taking the mic out of. I'm going to read this in my best Tom Hiddleston voice while Ash splutters up in the corner.
Are you all right, Pet?
Just still recovering.
Do you need us to smack your back? I will. He says, nobody had the context for that story and I'm still trying to work out a way of having a personal life and protecting it. The hardest thing was that it was a joke among friends on the 4th of July. So the interviewer had a lot of sympathy for him. I don't know if you've read the piece, but the interviewer was very like, oh, this poor guy's had to come out and he's finally had to address it so that it'll go away. Do we think that with somebody as A-list as Tom Hiddleston and Taylor Swift, when something like those ridiculous photos happen, are we really owed an explanation, or, you know, how much of a private life are they really entitled to when they're that famous?
I think they are entitled to a private life. I think that everybody is, obviously. But as much as their relationship was a private thing, it did not play out privately. Like, they were together for barely a month, I think it was. And we saw pictures of them on the beach with his mum. We saw them in London. They went to Italy at one point, didn't they?
They went to a lot of different places.
They did, like, a full-on world tour. And I just think that if you're going to... they should be able to do those things, and they should be able to do what normal couples want to do. But also, people do have this expectation of... they were doing it publicly.
Yeah, and Taylor Swift, you know, she's somebody who writes about her relationships a lot. Mm. So not that we're entitled to know about them. If she wants to keep something private, that's her prerogative. But I can understand why people would be so fascinated by somebody like Taylor Swift's relationships and private life when, you know, we invest so much time in them ourselves, because we're the ones who are listening to the music and we're being told these things.
I think as well, like, we can't prove it either way, but a very big part of me is like, those pictures that first came out when their relationship was announced were no coincidence that they just happened to be sat on those rocks smooching with a paparazzi nearby.
Well, we should point out that he has come out and insisted that they are legitimate photos and that they were not set up.
I'm just going to say I'm going to keep scratching my chin on that one.
All right, well, you might want to see someone about that, if nothing else. But yeah, so he's, I mean, that's the thing. All the way through, they weren't together for very long. And all the way through, as you've just said, Ash, people were constantly speculating, is this set up for attention? Because it was all quite conveniently timed as well, wasn't it? She just broken up with Calvin Harris. He had the night manager coming out.
There were Bond rumours as well.
There were Bond rumours. Oh, yes, there were. Oh, God. Flashback. Yeah, the Bond rumours. God damn.
Which seem to have disappeared in
almost
in
as if
months.
That tank top might have done his career some bad. Fancy that. Yeah, but I mean, you can't really say that we're entitled to know these things, even if they are running around saying them. What I will say, though, because in this interview, he says that the photos of him in the tank top, the infamous tank top, were private and they were unsolicited photos. But also, they were from one of her friend's Instagram accounts. And so, Rachel, if you started seeing somebody and you, on your Instagram page, were wearing a tank top with I heart their name on, like, you can best believe that come Monday morning, I will come into this office and rip the piss out of you for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And you can't say that those photos were private and blah, 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 blah. They were on social media.
I think this is what comes across quite well in the interview as well, is he kind of, even though, he, you know, he's finally addressed it, he seems to realise that he needs to. And I think he even says it at one point, if I don't address this, it's going to just follow me round. So he kind of, you know, finally talks about them. And like, whether you can, you know, there's lots of what he says, which is up for debate. But the fact that he's done it, I think, is something good. He's done a good thing in realising that if he doesn't just say it now, every single red carpet,
it's not going to go away.
Every single interview, that question is always going to be there.
I mean, the man's a Golden Globe winner, and we're still more interested in a tank top that he wore. That also, we haven't even said. He said, he claims the tank top, he was wearing it because he hurt his back in the water, grazed his back, and didn't want to get the graze in the sun. I can't believe we haven't even addressed this bit of the story yet, which is my favourite bit. He scratched his back and didn't want to put it in the sun. So one of Taylor's friends was like, oh, I have this I heart Taylor Swift vest.
As you do.
Which opens the question, why did she have it in the first place? So he's just pinning the blame on somebody else.
She's had them printed up for them all, hasn't she?
I mean, yes, I know that has. I've printed them up for my friends with I heart DW on. So if she has done it, she's gone up my estimation.
Well, he needs to get in the sea, to be honest, because the sea's a natural antiseptic.
Well, so. All right, Bear Grylls over here.
I didn't know we had a doctor on the show today.
You know what, Ash? I don't think I can top that. So let's just move on. There we go. This is a brilliant antiseptic, Tom Hiddleston. So says Dr. Percival. It's been 15 years this week since Will Young won Pop Idol.
Oh my God.
So do we all remember this amazing moment?
We do.
From our childhood. Will Young, Gareth Gates, the Pop Idol final. Who was everybody rooting for back then?
Oh, my house was a firm Gareth Gates house.
We were a Gareth house.
We were, dare I say it, a house divided.
Like Brexit.
It was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was the first and only row me and my mum have ever had. I was firmly team Gareth, but my mum was all about Will Young. Yeah, so, I mean, That's why I always think if I was to marry Will Young, my mum would be happy at least. That's the main reason.
Well, yeah, at least you wouldn't have to go through that approval process.
Yeah, I know. I've already got two thumbs up. So, Will, if you're listening, DM us. My DMs are open. So, Will Young won Pop Idol, and he's since, I've got me bit paper here. He's since gone on in the past 15 years to have six top three albums, four number one albums, six top three albums, four of the number ones. Three number one singles, 10 Brit Awards nominations, and perhaps most pivotally of all, Heat Magazine's Torso of the Year in 2005.
That's quite an accolade.
I'm up for that this year, everybody, so fingers crossed. Do we think we're ever going to have somebody that successful from a talent show again?
Well, firstly, I didn't realise Will Young was like... I knew he was successful, but that's quite a list of...
That's
accolades.
That's the future Mr. Daniel Welshaw underestimating there. Yeah, he's had a very successful career. When you think 15 years in the industry.
But yeah, 15 years is a really long time.
For a talent show winner, and he's still doing it. You know, his last number one was 2 years ago.
I saw him at Glastonbury last year.
Oh, all right.
In a bizarre
name drop. Yeah, he's still going. Do we think that we're ever going to see that again, though? Because it's been a long time since we've had somebody come off a show like Britain's Got Talent or The X Factor and actually do anything with it. I think the last ones were maybe Little Mix. Ash, you're like a big talent show fan.
I am.
What do you reckon?
I think we lived in a very different era back in 2002, didn't we? Where people were really, really, really invested in these people. And I don't feel like, you know, Matt Terry versus Sarah Alto really captured the imagination of the public in the same way, and perhaps that Will versus Gareth did.
I'm just so glad that you said that there, because I couldn't remember who came second in the X Factor.
Well, there we go.
And it was 2 months ago.
And you wrote, and you spent months writing.
I spent every single day writing about these people, and already they're just completely right. Next, who's next? I think the problem is now is that we talk about these talent shows on this podcast a lot, but the problem is that they're so manufactured now that you've just said it right. Like, you can't get invested in these contestants anymore.
Also, I don't just think it's that. I think as well, they just come along so quick. It's like a conveyor belt. Like, one finishes, another starts. That finishes, then another starts. Like, it's just endless. Whereas, like, back in Pop Idol was kind of the first of its kind, really.
Yeah,
I know we had Pop Stars before that, but it was the first one where we had voting for someone week in, week out, voting someone off. So I feel now we're just a bit desensitized to it in the same way that, you know, people don't vote in Big Brother like they used to.
Yeah. Like, we can see the strings now, can't we? Like, we can see the smoke and mirrors, whereas before it was new and fresh and exciting, whereas
now...
I
also think it was a lot more innocent back then.
Yeah.
Well.
It
like, there probably wasn't
so
as many strings.
Did it? It didn't feel quite so, like the conveyor belt of meat, as you
said.
You're
quite genuinely rooted for people, I think. Like, when the person you wanted to win, you believe their story because it hadn't been laid out to you in such the way that you could see, like you say, you can see the strings.
And I think there is such cynicism now. It's kind of like whenever anyone wins, you're like, oh, well, they're going to have one single and we're not going to hear again from them in like 6 months' time.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that's their trajectory that's set out for them, really.
Do you think that if maybe X Factor was to focus more on portraying people in a good light, in a light we can get behind and we can root for, do you think that that might make for better pop stars? Because I think we've just mentioned Little Mix, who are the biggest X Factor winners, like, that are still going, definitely. Half of their appeal is their personality and their friendship, and we like seeing what they're doing away from the stage. Do we reckon that that might be what the key is?
I think the problem is the show itself, because I absolutely love Little Mix. I think they're brilliant. I've seen them live. They're amazing. I couldn't tell you one thing about when they were on X Factor. Mm. I didn't watch it.
Apart from when they sang On Vogue, Don't Let Go.
Oh, goddamn, yes.
Which was a moment.
What a moment.
But everything I know about them and their personality has come from since then. And I think this is the problem with today's ones. Whoever won it last year, I feel like he's not... What is he even doing?
Matt Terry.
It's a nice chap. Like, interviewed him. It's a nice man.
Oh, just going to pick up that.
Sorry, that was a clang.
That wasn't so much of a clang, more of just like, you know, when you drop like a tuppence on the floor. That was more.
Please
what
don't
that
use
was.
The word tuppence.
Well, Rachel, all I have to say is that I feel sorry for you not remembering Little Mix on X Factor, because they duetted with Tulisa at one point.
Forgive us for what we have... They didn't sing that there, did they?
I'm just going to move on
quickly. I was also going to say, to your point, like, I think if we do go along the lines of like making like nice pop stars and stuff, The Voice would have had like a successful artist by now, and they still haven't. So
I think just it's like you said before, the whole format is so tired and people just won't buy it. And I don't know what it would take to get the British public on side again.
I mean, even look at Leona. Leona was touted as like the next big thing. And admittedly, she had huge success in the sort of few years after she won the show. But now I can't remember the last single that she had. That
she just did. Cats Man stepped in for Nicole.
Oh well, yeah. We'll know what happened there, don't we?
She wasn't booted off. Pissed Andrew Lloyd Webber off though, didn't she?
Royally.
Remember when he said some other girl will get the Tony now? Never mind. She mentored Matt Terry, so I'm sure she's thrilled with her decision. Should we end with a quiz?
Yeah.
All right. So on into it. We like to end with a little bit of a game every week. Sometimes I get the facts completely wrong, but this week, believe it or not, I've done some double checking, so I know that we're good to go.
No disclaimers next week.
No disclaimers next week.
Don't
no.
Jinx it.
Well, I know actually. Yeah, it's still all to come, isn't it? So it's the Grammys on Sunday, everybody, and as we all know, the Best New Artist category can make or break a career. Past winners include. Get me a bit of paper. Past winners include The Beatles, Tom Jones, Mariah Carey, Bette Midler, The Carpenters, and Sam Smith. This year, we've got a load of people that I've never heard of, apart from Chance the Rapper. So what we're going to do is I'm going to shout out some years and the nominees, and I want you to tell me who you think won that year.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Okay.
You're going to be good. Rachel, we're coming to you first because you lost out last week to Francesca, so... You can hopefully pull it together this week. So the year is 2014. The nominees were Macklemore, Ed Sheeran, and Kendrick Lamar. Who do you think won?
For Best New Artist.
Best New Artist.
In 2014.
That's right.
Ed Sheeran only been around that long?
No, he's been around a lot longer.
Sorry, I'm probably giving you a helping hand there.
Okay, I'll guess the answer.
They were all nominated, I would just like to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no red herrings here. They're all nominees.
I'm going to just tell you who I think it should have been.
All right. I mean, we've all got homes to go to, Rachel.
I'm going to just hope that that's the answer. Kendrick Lamar.
It was not Kendrick Lamar. It was Macklemore. And that was the same year that he performed with Madonna.
I remember the performance.
It was good, wasn't it?
It was good.
I like that one. You can read my top 30 Grammys performances on the Huffington Post UK now. So, Rachel, I'm afraid no dice in that one. Ashley, the year is 2005. And the nominees were Joss Stone, Kanye West... And Maroon 5.
Oh, okay. Joss Stone was really successful in the States for a while, so I kind of want to say...
Are you digging on me? That was actually just Cher, wasn't it?
Do you remember when she came back with that accent?
The accent, yeah.
At the Brits. And everyone
I remember it well.
Joss Stone, Kanye West, or Maroon 5. I'm going to go Maroon 5.
That is correct. Ooh, remember that album, Songs About Jane?
That was so good.
That was the most Caucasian album of all time, but it is good. Rachel, the year is 2000. We're all worried about the Y2K bug, and Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, and Macy Gray are all up for Best New Artist. Who do you think got the award?
Was it Christina Aguilera?
It's Christina Aguilera! Everyone thought it was going to be Britney. But it wasn't.
Contrav.
It was Contrav, and Britney performed that year as well. Embarrassing. Ashley, so we're ones each at the moment. Ashley, the year is 2008, and the nominees are Amy Winehouse, Feist of iPod advert fame, and Taylor Swift.
Is Feist the one that's like, I feel it all? I can't believe I'm singing on
it's
a
very,
podcast.
Very musical
You've
this week, aren't
we? You've already sung once in the last 20 minutes.
I can't believe it's taken us 4 weeks to get this musical, to be honest.
Feist, Amy Winehouse, and what was the other one?
Taylor Swift. Little known artist Taylor
See,
Swift.
See, I don't think Taylor Swift started. I think she started low-key and then got big. So I'm going to discount her. That noise makes me think that it's now the wrong answer. Fuck it. I'm going to go Feist.
Yeah, wrong. Oh. It's Amy Winehouse.
Damn.
So we're ones each. Rachel, the year is 2004. Got 50 Cent, Evanescence, and Sean Paul.
Sean Paul, 2004.
He's been around way longer than that.
Listen, take it up with the Grammys committee, all right? Yeah. I'm just reading me bit paper.
We get back to our desks? Those emails.
I had that Sean Paul album on my year 10 ski trip, and that was not 2004. I think it might have been 2004.
For goodness sakes. Sorry, who were they again? Sean Paul, 50 Cent, and Evanescence. Was it 50 Cent?
No, it was then. It was Evanescence. Side note, 50 Cent, Evanescence, and Sean Paul is my exact fantasy dinner party.
So there we go. Hopefully. Nice. I had all those albums, you'll be surprised to hear.
Wow, which was your favourite?
I really enjoyed the 50 Cent one. My mum, less so.
50 Cent has so many bangers.
All right. don't even know how to respond to that. Ashley, it's 2009, and we've got Adele, Duffy, and the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, okay. So Adele 2009. So this was 19 era. Duffy scooped all the Brits that year, and Adele barely got anything.
You got me begging you for mercy.
So I'm going to go Duffy.
Sorry, I was having a drink of water. The correct answer is Adele.
Oh.
Sorry.
She's got a lot of Grammys.
Right, Rachel, let's do this. 2002, the nominees are Alicia Keys, Linkin Park, and Nelly Furtado.
Was it Nelly Furtado?
It was Alicia Keys. So, Ash, if you get this... You've won if you get this.
If you get this.
2011, and the nominees are Justin Bieber, Florence and the Machine, and Esperanza Spalding.
Can you say that last one again?
Esperanza Spalding.
I just really enjoyed the way you said it.
Thank you. A-level Spanish,
so
you
much
know.
So that I forgot the other two nominees, so can you please remind me?
Justin Bieber and Florence and the Machine.
Oh, I don't think it was... Oh, no, maybe it was... No, Florence hasn't got a Grammy. I'm going to go Justin Bieber.
It was actually Esperanza Spalding, the first ever jazz artist to win Best New Artist, which means we're at the tie break, everybody. And we're also about 10 minutes over my usual 20 minutes. But whatever, it's fine. So the tie break question, first one to shout out the correct answer. Who won Best New Artist at last year's Grammys? I'll give you a clue.
For another 10 minutes.
It's not James Bay and it's not Tori Kelly, and they were both nominated. I'll give you a clue. It was quite a controversial win for a young woman.
Iggy Azalea.
You're on the right lines.
Is she a rapper?
No.
Oh my God, we're never going to get
singer-songwriter.
She's a singer-songwriter.
She got a guitar.
She might own a guitar. I don't know her entire
inventory. Is there any other way we can speed this up?
She's Iggy Azalea. She's a singer-songwriter. She writes songs for herself, and she's been known to write songs for other people as well.
Jessie J.
It's not Jessie J.
Sia?
No. She's American. She's young.
Ariana Grande.
No. Oh my God.
You're on the right lines as
I
well.
I can picture her now. Meghan Trainor.
Meghan Trainor! Oh. Rachel wins the Mars bar and I win a nice lie down after that 20-minute quiz. We'll be back next week for more Into It. Don't forget to subscribe. Laters!